This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
New York legislators are attempting to pass a bill that would end public funding for institutions supporting boycott, divestment, or sanctions of Israel.
This is in response to the American Studies Association, known as the ASA, which recently voted for such an academic boycott. New York University, Cornell, Columbia, SUNY Buffalo, and SUNY Stony Brook are among the institutions with faculty affiliated with the ASA, which is made up of 5,000 professors. Recently, the ASA overwhelmingly voted to refuse to enter into formal collaborations with Israeli academic institutions or with scholars who are expressly serving as representatives or ambassadors of those organizations or on behalf of the Israeli government until Israel ceases violating international law and Palestinian human rights.
So now, in response to responses to the academic and cultural boycott of Israel and the issues that threaten to sink the latest round of peace talks, we're joined by Riham Barghouti, Palestinian-American, who lived in and worked in Palestine for 10 years and is a founding member of the Palestinian Campaign for Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel and
Adala, New York, and also Andrew Ross, who is the director of the American Studies Program at New York University and a member of the American Studies Association. Why don't we begin by explaining more the nature of the resolution? What actually is the boycott that is drawing such venom, such hostility, such aggression? And we'll find out from the sources there as well. Riham, do you want to start?
Yeah, so the American Studies Association began discussing this several years ago, and a resolution was actually put forth in their conference in 2012. And ultimately, after months of like debate and discussion, a resolution was put forward for the conference that happened in Washington in 2013. There was, you know, a long-held debate. There was multiple panels on the issue of academic boycott and the need for it, and there was an open membership meeting at the conference, which a large majority of speakers spoke for the academic boycott. And what it is it's calling for a boycott of Israeli academic institutions, ending institutional affiliations with Israeli academic institutions, which are ultimately complicit with Israeli violations of international law and Palestinian human rights. So they overwhelmingly voted for the academic boycott. The general membership voted for it. 66% of the people that voted for the academic boycott, and the resolution was passed.
And Andrew, the press in New York City and two legislators in the New York State Senate and Assembly have gone ballistic over this. Why don't you talk about the reaction and also, especially NYU, where there are a number of different faculty members in the association, and indeed the faculty president resides there, what the reaction at NYU is?
Sure. Well, the evolution has been over a number of years. There's been a lot of discussion about in the association about how to respond to the call from Palestinian civil society to engage in the BDS movement. And so there were a lot of deliberations, and a resolution was put forward last year, and there's been a lot of discussion in the course of this year before the resolution was voted on. There's also a lot of talk about how it relates to the scholarly field of American studies. It's quite relevant in many ways that that American Studies is the largest association that's done this so far, and it reflects a growing consensus within scholarship in the field that we should take this step. Well, the response has been very predictable, very ugly, but very predictable, and it does demonstrate that the window of opportunity to actually debate Israeli policy rationally in this country is a very small window indeed, and for the last 15 or 20 years it's been shut down very quickly. Anyone who's critical of Israeli policy in the U.S. Is subject to an organized campaign that involves hate mail and all sorts of threats. And so we predicted this kind of response, not just in the press, but also through our own institutions. A A lot of members and programs connected with the ASA have been subject to this kind of hate mail, threats from donors to cut off aid, and probably in the most high-profile way, dozens and dozens of university professors issuing statements condemning the boycott. So all of that was very predictable. What's more interesting in many ways is that a lot of folks who are part of or sympathetic to the BDS movement have seen this as a
and
kind of turning
point. And the BDS movement is?
A boycott, divestment, and sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks now see this as a kind of turning point, that a major professional association has come out and broken some of the ice, so we've seen some melting around this. And things will no doubt get uglier, but increasingly I think we're heading towards a moment that's one of these whose side are you on moments in progressive history in the U.S. that people really will have to decide whose side they're on this particular issue.
How, and we'll get back to Reham, but one of the things that 66% of the voters in the ASA National Council endorse this resolution, which is pretty significant. And I'm just interested in response, which surely must have been raised within the academic community, that this affects academic freedom, that this is a limitation on, that this is a right response to academia and the free expression of intellectual ideas and so on. So how did that play out, and what's your response, Andrew?
It's an important issue. I also happen to be president of the NYU chapter of the American Association of University Professors, and I've served on the National Committee for Academic Freedom of that organization, and that organization has a no-boycott position, an anti-boycott position. It's contested within the organization, and I'm sure members of our chapter don't feel very strongly that we should abide by that position either. The fact is that part of the call from Palestinian civil society was precisely based upon the denial of academic freedoms to Palestinian academics and students. And the record of that denial is fairly strong and fairly powerful. And that's one of the reasons why we decided to pass the resolution or vote for the resolution. That said, the resolution is quite specific. It targets Israeli institutions. It does not target individuals. In fact, it encourages individual dialogue with Israeli academics as well as Palestinian academics. It's a call that is voluntary. It doesn't enforce anyone to abide by the resolution. But it does target those institutions because they have operated as adjuncts of the occupation. These are institutions that work as an arm of the state in Israel. They do military research, they develop weaponry, and they provide a lot of support, indispensable support for the occupation. So that's what's being targeted here. That's quite far removed from these issues about academic freedom that generally have been promoted as a smokescreen, I think, for condemning the resolution.
In terms of academic freedom, it's important, I think, to ask the question of whose academic freedom are we talking about. So it would have been pertinent if any of these university professors or lawmakers had spoken out against Israel's violations of Palestinian academic freedom that has, you know, included the arrest, detainment, the bombing of schools and universities, closures, including Birzeit University, which was closed some 15 times throughout its history. So, you know, discussion of academic freedom kind of puts aside any type of acknowledgement of Palestinians as deserving of those same freedoms. And then, in fact, as Andrew said, because it's an institutional boycott and not an individual boycott, it actually does not violate anybody's academic freedom. What does violate academic freedom is this attempt to intimidate and censor people that are standing up in solidarity with the Palestinian call for academic and cultural boycott here in the United States by threatening to withdraw funding. People have had, you know, personal threats against them for signing on to the call, and I think that's, you know, that the academic freedom of people that are standing in solidarity with the Palestinians is actually being violated.
And Riam, if you could also place this in a wider context in terms of other boycotts and other actions that the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel Committee has had for other members of their associations, what else has been going on?
Yeah, definitely. This is part of a global movement, and it started really in response to the Palestinian call for academic and cultural boycott in 2004 and a call for a general boycott, divestment, and sanctions with consumer, economic, and cultural scale. And on the global level, we've seen, in the United States, we've seen numerous student associations, groups calling for divestment on campuses. We've seen community church groups also carrying out, like the Presbyterian Church and the Methodist Church, a call for boycott of settlement products. And we are seeing that on the economic level, we are actually having an impact. So you have things like Morgan Stanley Index for Social Responsible Investment delisting Caterpillar and Veolia. And as a result, TIA CREF, which is the largest pension fund in the United States, as well dropping those two companies from its social choice fund. You have the Quaker Fiduciary Committee also dropping Caterpillar, HP, and Motorola from their investment portfolio. So you are actually having concrete impact on the consumer level. And on the cultural boycott level as well, you've had a number of artists, intellectual figures, refusing to participate in events inside Israel, including Roger Waters and Alice Walker and Stephen Hawking. And there is this increasing debate now, and it was, I guess, ultimately inevitable that it would reach into U.S. academia. But this increasing debate about the necessity of really beginning to hold Israel accountable for the crimes that it is committing, for the violations that it's carrying out against the Palestinian people and against international law.
Riham, I wonder if you can talk about how the complicity, if you will, of Israeli universities in human rights violations and the forms that it takes, that, of course, is the precursor to the boycott divestiture movement as a strategy towards dealing with the issue of Palestinian self-determination, Palestinian human rights.
Right. So Israeli universities are actually mostly state-controlled and state-run, and they provide a lot of the research that is being used, whether it's for the military-industrial complex. They have joint projects with a number of military industries like Elbit and others that create the service, their surveillance equipment, the drones that are being carried out in attacks against Gaza and elsewhere. They also themselves are complicit in the fact that, like, the Hebrew University is actually housed, part of it, it's housed on confiscated Palestinian land. And then in addition to that, they also carry out discrimination for Palestinian students who are not given the same housing or scholarship opportunities because they do not serve in the Israeli army. So a lot of these incentives are provided for people that serve in the military, and where Palestinians do not serve in the military, they are then not allowed to be given, you know, certain privileges that the Israeli Jewish students are being given. So the complicity of the universities is wide-ranging.
Andrew, a number of union federations and unions throughout the world have been participating in the boycott, albeit sometimes on a limited basis with regard to goods that have been produced within the occupied territories. Do we see anything like that in the United States?
Well, that's a good question. I know that building bridges is a labor-oriented show, and I was going to add to Riham's list of sectors that have responded to the Palestinian call. There's a very long list of trade union congresses in other countries, South Africa, Scotland, Norway, Belgium, Brazil, the Basque unions, Ireland, Spain, even in Canada. They really have been responsive to the request for solidarity from the part of the Palestinian trade union movement. To my mind, this debate really has yet to take place in the American labor movement. It's something that probably has to take place fairly soon. There have been sporadic acts of solidarity. Dock workers in Oakland California did respect a labor and community picket by refusing to unload an Israeli cargo ship after the Israeli attacks on the Freedom Flotilla in the summer of 2010, but these have been fairly sporadic. The official position, of course, of AFL-CIO is to stand very close to supporting the Israeli trade union itself, despite the fact that scores of trade union congresses overseas have dissociated themselves from the Israeli trade union movement, which is really an arm of the state, very active in the history of colonization and in the occupation. So I really do see this is one of the next steps for the BDS movement, is to try and have this debate and discussion within the labor movement itself in the U.S. Be a very important source of solidarity and support. Very divisive, of course, too, but that's been the case at every step of the way, just as it was with the history of apartheid and solidarity with the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa. We're really replaying a lot of that history once again, unfortunately.
Rehan Barghouti, one of the things that's interesting now is there are organizations that independently but simultaneously are supporting really the ASA National Council, the ASA boycott, the Native American Indigenous Studies Association announced its elected council unanimous support for the academic boycott of Israel. But I want to turn to, Ken had mentioned the responses, the vehement responses. What we didn't say is in particular that people such as Dove Hykind and Jeffrey Klein are two of the essential people in the legislature that are really leading the attacks. And of course, we also have very prominent people like the president of New York University, John Sexton, and Provost David McLaughlin, who suddenly are talking about how they are disappointed and they have voiced their disappointment and opposition to the boycott vote. Can you talk about that as well, the nature, the breadth of the responses, and what's wrong with them?
Well, I really feel like this, you know, the New York Times called it a cautionary tale for BDS activists. What I really feel is it's a form of intimidation at its worst. You know, it's an attempt to silence debate and discussion. And what's very interesting is that a number of these university presidents that have put out statements, you know, faculty within these universities have called them out on the fact that there was no discussion or debate. You know, there was no interaction with the constituencies within these various places to have a discussion around what academic boycott is and different people feel within it. And it would be fine if really they had taken the same process as the American Studies Association, where a discussion took place, where it was put to an open membership meeting and then a membership vote. And then they came out in resolutions in opposition to the academic boycott. That would be one thing. But for you to start threatening to end funding, for you to demand that institutions withdraw their ties to the Academic Studies Association, for you to allow personal threats against individuals that signed on to it, I think it's quite problematic. And the question really is why, you know, such a vehement attack against this thing. This is not a binding resolution. You know, it took Palestinians some 56 years under really brutal occupation, colonization, land confiscation, settlement building, killings, torture, and so on, to ultimately call for a boycott of Israeli academic and cultural and economic institutions. And it took next to nothing for these lawmakers now to call for a boycott against the American Studies Association. It's a non-binding resolution. And really what it did was, and what it needed to do, is it brought this issue to the forefront for a debate and for a discussion, which what you would think would be the response for rational individuals. It's less, this is an obviously an issue. Let's discuss it. Let's debate it. Let's understand it.
Andrew, quickly, how can people support the American Studies Association in its endeavor and also maybe join it to support it? And also, Rehum, what's happening with further boycotts of Israel and how do people find out more about that?
Well, I just add to Reham's comments that I really think the response of university presidents is pretty cynical. It's all about protecting their donor base. They're really only concerned about their donors for the most part. That's why they're doing what they're doing. They're not engaging with the issues whatsoever. None of their statements that I've seen show any evidence that they've actually read the resolution of the ASA or thought very deeply about any of the issues involved. They simply want to keep the money coming in. What can people do in their own backyards, in their own organizations, their own networks? As I said earlier in the show, I think this resolution has opened up a window, whether it's practical, and if it is practical, for people to show public statements of solidarity with ASA resolution or mount their own resolutions within their own organizations. I think all of these things need to happen now, and there may be some momentum that we have despite the backlash, because the backlash is perfectly predictable, and anyone who's getting into this movement should be prepared to have very thick skin, because it gets very ugly very quickly, but it has to happen.
Rihanna?
Yeah, and I think that what we all are realizing, and I think that this is one of the reasons why the attack has been so vehement, is really this is the beginning, right? And I think that more and more people will start to read the Palestinian call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions and begin to understand the reasons why Palestinians put it forward and look at the numerous cultural and academic and economic boycott and divestment sanctions activities that have taken place over the past 9 or 10 years. I think it's really important to write letters of support to the American Studies Association and to individuals that are really being intimidated and threatened through this process, including Lisa Dugan, who's the incoming American Studies Association president. And I think regardless of anyone's position on boycott, divestment, and sanctions, you have to support academics' rights to express their political beliefs on campus without repercussion. Of course, there's a number of local BDS campaigns. You have a number of organizations in New York, including Jewish Voice for Peace New York, Adela New York, the organization I work with, Brooklyn for Peace. There's the Park Slope Food Co-op Members for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions. There's the New York Campaign Against the Cornell Technion Partnership. So all of these organizations people can find more information about and see where they might be interested in hooking in.
And what's the best website to go to get involved and expand this and to use it and make sure that it has the efficacy that is the boycott divestiture movement to get what it is supposed to accomplish, which is the respect for Palestinian human rights, the recognition of Palestinian self-determination, and to cease the violations of international law. Where do we go?
I would address everybody go to the BDS National Committee website, which is bdsmovement.net, which would provide an overview of the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement, and I would welcome people to come to our website, adalahny.org, adalahny.org. If they just want to learn more about other our organization or other groups that are working in New York or in the United States, also the U.S. Campaign to End the Occupation has really good resources and information for a national campaign.
Well, Andrew Ross, director of the American Studies Program at NYU and a member of the American Studies Association, and Reham Barghouti, who is with Adala New York, and a founding member of the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Now, New York legislators are attempting to pass a bill that would end public funding for institutions supporting boycott, divestment, sanctions of Israel. The New York anti-boycott bill is aimed at shutting down the growing movement opposing Israel's discriminatory policies against Palestinians. And now for a report on this attack on the American Studies Association and the BDS movement, we go to an excerpt from the Real News Network.
Welcome to the Real News Network. I'm Jessel Knorr in Baltimore. The New York State Senate has passed a bill that would bar the use of state funds to any institution engaging in boycotting of countries or higher education institutions. The bill was passed in response to the passage of a resolution by the American Studies Association endorsing the boycott of Israeli academic institutions that violate the human rights of Palestinians. A discussion on the bill in the New York State Assembly was recently taken off the agenda for discussion, though the bill will be considered later in a different form. Now joining us to discuss this is Dima Halady. She's the founder and director of Palestine Solidarity Legal Support and Cooperating Counsel with the Center for Constitutional Rights. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
So can you start off by giving us an update of where this bill stands right now in the New York State Assembly?
It was passed very quickly by the State Senate. It was supposed to be considered by the Assembly. This bill was really fast-tracked in the Assembly. It was supposed to be considered by the Higher Education Committee, the Ways and Means Committee, and the Rules Committee. Originally, the Higher Ed Committee was supposed to consider it. We learned it had been moved. So it was clear that there was a large effort to get this passed very quickly. What happened was that after a huge effort to mobilize people in opposition to this bill, it's been delayed. The Higher Ed Committee took it off of its agenda, and it's now yet to be seen what will happen with it. It may be introduced in a different form, so we're not sure at this point what will happen with it, but the opposition came from a lot of different organizations, including the Center for Constitutional Rights and PSLS, as well as Jewish Voice for Peace, the CUNY Faculty and Staff Union. So there were a lot of forces mobilized against this bill once it became clear what it was about and the real threat that it poses to First Amendment speech.
To keep up with the American Studies Association BDS campaign and the New York State Legislature's ongoing attack on BDS and free speech, go to the American Studies Association website, www.theasa.net.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.